For RightsCast recaps, discounts on editing services, and educational content delivered to your inbox once a month, you can subscribe to the R.R. Campbell Writes newsletter over at rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. Again, that's rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. The R.R. Campbell Writes newsletter, where all news is the right news. Thanks for listening. So you've explored your options, or perhaps you've known from the get-go that your book was perfect for it, and it's finally time to pursue self-publication. But now questions linger. Where do you start? How do you get your book published step by step? What can you do to make sure your self-pub book launch is as effective as possible? Well, this episode's guest has been through the process more times than I have fingers on one hand, and in this self-publishing how-to miniseries, she'll answer all of those questions and more. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 29 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell Writescast. Before we get to part one of our interview, however, I have some thrilling news. You may have heard me mention my manuscript for Accounting for It All on this podcast, Twitter, and on my website in general over the course of the last 6 months or so. Well, in case you haven't heard, I'm delighted to announce that it's been selected for publication by the incredible team over at Nine Star Press. That's right, my debut novel, Accounting for It All, will be available in November of 2018 in both print and ebook. If this is the first time you're hearing of it, Accounting for It All is the story of Robin Weathers, a porn star turned accountant who has to juggle the impending death of her terminally ill mother and the return of the woman she loves to her life, all the while fending off an IRS audit of a money laundering scheme to which she had no idea she was a part. I couldn't be more thrilled to share Robin's story with all of you, and if you'd like updates on the publication journey as her story advances along it, be sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter at rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter, follow me on Twitter at @IamRRCampbell, and stay tuned to this podcast, which will feature a mini-series on the making of Accounting for It All as we near the book's publication date. Thanks again to everyone for their support since this announcement was first made a couple of weeks ago, and for your ongoing engagement as we get closer and closer to the book's launch. All right, now let's get to the real reason you're here. A self-publishing how-to brought to you by this mini-series guest, Sione Ashland. Sione is an editor and writing coach with a master's degree in English and over 15 years of editing experience who gets massive amounts of satisfaction from helping authors achieve their writing and publishing goals. She's also the creator of the 2017 Short Indie Contest for self-publishing authors, and she's also a revise and resub, or hashtag RevPit, editor. On top of this, she's writing a guide to structuring a novel that she intends to self-pub in late 2018 or early 2019, so stay tuned for that as well. What I'm trying to say is Sione is the perfect person to walk us through the self-pub process, and I'm elated she agreed to do so as part of this RightsCast miniseries. Without further ado, let's slide into Sione's step-by-step on the self-publication process. Stay tuned after this installment of her interview for a preview of what we'll cover in part two. Thanks, as always, for listening. Well, thank you very much, Sione, for joining me for this episode.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and talk about self-publishing.
Yeah, this is an exciting topic, and I really hope that over the course of this conversation, we can lay out this sort of beginner's guide or a how-to for folks who are interested in self-publishing but have never done it themselves. So, of course, though, before we actually get into the self-publication process, we have to have some other critical steps completed along the way. And what would those steps be, in your view?
So before you actually go to self-publish, first of all, you need to have a finished book, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So that to me means that it's gone through multiple rounds of feedback and revision with CPs, beta readers, editors, that kind of thing. And going through all of the rounds of editing, which for me include developmental, which is the bigger picture stuff, the line editing, copy editing, and then later proofreading, but all, you know, that's at the end after you've actually formatted and uploaded it and all that kind of stuff. So that's step number one, I would say. And then somewhere around in there, you also want to start doing market research. And the reason that I say somewhere in there is because I find that doing the market research while you're writing, or preferably you have read other books in your genre and that kind of thing, that's going to help you get a sense of what readers in your genre are expecting And then that's going to help you make some of the revision decisions. But it's most important for our purposes for this conversation, because it's going to help you understand what it is that clues your readers in when they're looking for books that they want to buy in terms of keywords. Like, what are the keywords that they associate with books that they enjoy? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think market research does seem like a really critical step. And so in order to maybe make sure we give it a fair shake, what would be some places that folks could go to try and do some of that market research? Would that include kind of, you know, dinking around on Amazon and looking for comp titles, or like you said, just making sure they're familiar with the genre so they can get a feel for what the appeal is to a wider net of readers?
Yes to all that. I mean, it's a little bit tricky with self-publishing because often those of us who self-publish are doing so not just because we don't like jumping through all of the hoops of traditional publishing, but also because maybe we're writing and wanting to publish books that don't fit neatly into a single genre. So that doesn't make it, it does make it a little bit tricky, but even so, it's really important to do that market research. As already mentioned, doing the reading, finding out like what else is out there that is being published, maybe in your, in the genres that you're drawing from. And then, as you said, Brian, getting on Amazon, for example, and looking for comp titles and seeing how those are being described, like when the, in the book blurb. And also at that time, I consider looking at other book covers, really important part of market research, because that's going to inform the cover design, whether you're doing it yourself or hiring somebody. I think it's really important to be aware of what covers in your genre look like. But yeah, those are the main two ways that I start to do market research. And then if you're working with a professional editor, they can help in that regard too.
And I'll say this as an additional tip, and this is something I think I might have actually picked up from you as part of a previous conversation we had. When you're on Amazon, if you find a title that you think is something you could use as a comp title, definitely check out what other folks have bought in that recently purchased with area, so you can see what other books they might have bought that would be similar to that one, so you can kind of branch out and get a basis for other titles.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good trick too. You just got to make sure that you're looking at the viewers have also purchased and not what Amazon's paid ads for books like this title are coming up as, because that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good distinction to draw.
Yeah, this is actually a really, it's an involved process that really you don't want to rush. That was my main mistake when I started self-publishing, is like, I just want to write the book and put down all the words and then hit publish and boom, and like magic, it's going to sell. And, you know, probably not. That's probably not.
Not the smartest or safest way to go, probably.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, I don't know, for me, that approach, it wasn't taking myself or my writing very seriously. And it wasn't, like, if you want to make money, and not everybody who's self-publishing wants to make money from their books, and that's totally valid. But if you do want to make any money from your books, then you have to treat this as a business. And that's part of the reason there's so many steps involved. So yeah, after the draft and you've done market research, then the next thing is to come up with your keywords and write, using those keywords, write your book blurb and your short and long descriptions. And then I would say after that, then you need to decide whether you want to do ebook, print, audiobook, or some combination of all of those, like how you want to publish it and who you want to distribute with, meaning are you going to hire one of the self-publishing help companies to do all of this for you, or are you going to go, you know, put it directly on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and Nook, or sorry, Nook is Barnes and Noble, but Amazon and Nook and Kobo and Apple and all of that kind of stuff. And then, and also part of that, because you also need to decide whether you want to buy ISBNs. And part of that decision might come from knowing how you want to distribute. So all of these things are linked, right? And then after that, a book cover design, which, you know, is involved. We'll go more into detail, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, we certainly will. Yeah, we will.
Yeah. And then formatting your manuscript for the like whether you want to do ebook or print, those take two different kinds of formats. And then uploading it or delivering it to the distributor, and then proofreading, because proofreading is reading the proof. And so it's like, if you decide to do print, for example, it's having the physical book in your hand, making sure that it's the layout is showing up correctly, the formatting is showing up correctly, that you didn't lose any of the italics or bolds or different fonts that you put in there, for example.
Yeah.
And also that it's like that last round of copy editing to make sure you got the errors. And then the last step I have on here, which is actually not the last step, is following through with your marketing strategy. And I would say that you, if you are trying to make money off your book, your marketing strategy should be co-developed starting about the same time that you're doing the market research and figuring out who your readers are, how they find books, and how they want to read the books. So those are the steps. That's the broad strokes.
Those are the broad brush strokes. And we have a lot of detail to jump into on that. And I'll say that, you know, of course, we're opening this episode up to be part of a larger conversation. And for any listeners who might be interested in what you just touched on, which was the marketing aspect, we do have some episodes available that feature both Cheryl Meir, and we also have some that feature Valerie Beal. Those will focus more on things like branding as an author, getting a book launch plan together, and then promoting yourself through traditional media, and then also being confident in doing that self-promotion. So those are some other great episodes to explore. There's a ton to be said for that. That's why there are four separate episodes available on those topics. But yeah, let's keep it focused today on self-publishing, because as you've shown, we have a lot to talk about. So we've got this broad brushstroke feel now, and you mentioned this as you were describing the steps, this decision about whether we're going to pursue doing an ebook, a print version, an audiobook. So what questions should we as writers be asking ourselves when we're deciding which avenues to pursue? And then do you see any advantages to pursuing one compared to another, if any at all?
I don't ever think about it in terms of having to choose between. I think it, for me, it's more about which formats make the most sense. One of the questions that's really important to ask yourself is how your readers read. So for example, if it's a picture book, picture books are not sold digitally very often. Now, the markets are evolving, so maybe at some point it'll be just as common for picture books to be read digitally as they are like in hard copy format. But you really want to think about like who your readers are and how they expect to read and find their books, because you don't want to just publish an ebook for an audience that never looks for ebooks. But the main factor that I considered when self-publishing my own books was cost. And that's why I started with ebook only, because even if you are doing print on demand, which means that you don't have to order a set number of copies and you don't have to fork out a bunch of dough to buy a bunch of copies of your own book, they just print it one at a time as people are ordering them, it still costs money to do it that way, not to upload it, but you need to order a different cover when you're doing print, and so that adds cost. Usually the graphic designer that you work with on your ebook cover will add on the print version for less than the cost of a separate cover, so that's helpful, but it is still an added cost. And it also adds cost because of what I mentioned earlier about having the physical copy of the book in your hands to proofread it. It still costs money to print out a copy of that. It's like $5 or something like that plus shipping. So it's not a huge amount, but it is money and things add up, as you can imagine.
Yeah, certainly. So it sounds like then the advantage to maybe pursuing an ebook, if you did have to choose between any, that would be the more economical option if that's a concern that a writer has when they get into this process.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible to publish an ebook entirely free, you know, and then there are a bunch of questions around, are you actually going to have a good cover that is going to attract an audience? But that's a whole other
that's a whole other part of the conversation. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and like, I'll just say Amazon, for example, because that's the distributor that I'm most familiar with. But when you go through Amazon, for example, they have free cover creator options where they have templates and you can upload a picture that you own the rights to. And so that doesn't cost anything, right? And then they have the template where you can choose different fonts. And here's the thing. And I'm not going to say that it's going to look like the most professional book cover, but it is a cover. And that's the important part. And then you can do your own formatting, too. They make that pretty easy. So, yeah, that was kind of the long answer to your question. But you can publish an ebook entirely for free.
Well, and that's an important thing, I think, to explore. I mean, obviously, we're reflecting on what it is that we'd like both for our book and what we can manage as individuals. But let's say we are the kind of person who is willing and able to commit to doing that ebook and a print version. So we've got to get into this whole, we're going to hire someone to do this cover for us, for example. How, in your view or in your experience, can one go about finding a quality cover design artist? Or are there like resources or a general pool of folks that we can reach out to once we reach that stage?
Man, if you find like a really good just like web page that has a bunch of awesome cover designers on it, let me know. I actually curated a list through my Twitter account. So I have a Twitter list called Cover Designers that has 10 cover designers listed on it that I have gone and looked at all of their sites and looked at the kinds of covers they produce. And they are there a variety of prices that I would recommend just based on what I'm seeing of their portfolios online. And then Readsy. So Readsy is an online curated marketplace for authors to hire editors and cover designers and people who do book publicity and things like that. And so they have a database of cover designers, and it's the curated part that I find most interesting, because all of the people who end up in their database need to have met certain requirements and come with recommendations.
That seems like it would be a really interesting route to pursue as well. And a question to follow up on that Twitter list that you've put together, that's one that anyone who were to visit your Twitter profile, that's a list that they'd be able to access? That's something that you have that as a public list, or is that one just...
Yeah.
Okay, very cool.
It's a public list, and my Twitter handle is @WriteLearnDream.
Perfect. Easy to remember. And we'll get that in the show notes as well. So if you're interested in checking out Sione's list of book cover artists that she has compiled, you can check that out. Otherwise, Readsy does sound like a really awesome option.
Yeah, and my third tip for finding a quality cover designer or making it yourself, thebookdesigner.com does a monthly cover design contest kind of thing, where Joel Friedman, who is the book designer, a bunch of people send in covers, and then he actually critiques a whole slew of them. And reading through the critiques was a mind-blowing educational experience for me. I wish I had done it before I hired a cover designer, because there's a whole lot that I didn't think about that goes into cover design. I was like, ooh, I want an eye-catching picture, and I want a font that you can read. And like, yes, obviously, those are interesting things, but there's so much more to it than that. And so whether you are going to make your own cover or you are going to hire a cover designer, I highly, highly recommend perusing a few of those monthly cover design contest posts just to get a sense for why certain covers look professional and others don't, and what specifically you have to think again about your reader. What are the visual cues that your readers are looking for that's going to tell them at a glance whether this is going to be a book that they're interested in? Like, for some reason, it just never occurred to me. But yeah, so go to thebookdesigner.com.
Yeah, that sounds like a really awesome resource. It's really neat that someone takes the time to put that together. And like you said, that seems like it'd be very educational, not only in knowing what kind of designer we want to work with, perhaps. But if we're going to be doing our own stuff, surely there are a bunch of awesome tips we can get from that too.
Absolutely.
And one other resource I'll recommend, it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier when we're doing some of that market research, etc. Check out some small presses that perhaps have a really neat aesthetic behind their covers, something that you think might be in line with your own, and see if they publicize who that cover artist is. Because though that person is doing work for that small press, if they're doing something that's working that indie angle, they might be in your price range. Or if you're actually going to make your cover yourself, you can always go to a place like canva.com, which is what I use to do a lot of the visual components for this podcast. It's what I use for pictures on my website. They actually have a template for book covers. They only have it for ebooks, but if you're going that route, that's something that you could explore if you're an individual taking on that responsibility of creating a cover yourself.
Those are great tips.
Yeah, definitely check those out. And I would say too, if you're not familiar with a particular small press, check out Amazon and look for some folks who might have gone the IndiePub route as well and see if you can't find who their cover designer was in that case. You might even be able to reach out to the author and ask that question, because of course, who doesn't want to get a compliment on the book designer that they chose, or if they designed that cover themselves? If I got that compliment as an author, I'd be really excited and love to help someone make a cover for themselves. So alternative routes to pursue, I suppose.
Totally. And just in alignment with that, on those monthly cover design contests on thebookdesigner.com, the cover designer is mentioned in each single entry. So you can look for the cover. If you see on there a cover design that you're like, wow, and it's in your genre, then you can track them down through that too.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I know we focused a lot on Amazon in terms of places that we can self-publish our work. So let's explore that a little bit. But what are some other distribution channels that might be out there? And do you see particular advantages or disadvantages to pursuing one over the other?
So there is like Amazon, and they have both a digital and a print on demand. So the digital is KDP and the print on demand is CreateSpace. There's also, for publishing ebooks, Smashwords and Nook, which is the Barnes and Noble, Kobo, Google Play, and then Apple's iBook. I would say that those are the most common. So when I self-publish an ebook, I use both Amazon and Smashwords. And the reason that I use Smashwords is not, and I'm so sorry, Mark Coker, but it's not because people actually buy books on Smashwords. But if you follow the formatting instructions to a T for Smashwords formatting, it not only works for uploading to Amazon's KDP, but also if you successfully format it in Smashwords and upload it to Smashwords, then they will put it in this like library catalog or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the term is, but what they do is then they distribute to other distributors on your behalf.
Oh, wow.
Like Apple and Sony and Nook and Kobo, and like there's a whole bunch of them, and including like they put it in the library catalogs, you know, for public libraries.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So that's why I use Smashwords. All that said, I would say that I don't actually make a lot of sales through those other distributors. And here's why. Here's why Amazon is ruling the market on self-publishing. Because these other e-retailers favor traditionally published ebooks over self-published ebooks in their algorithms. And so it's harder for readers to find your ebook when they're just browsing. If they already know your name and the title, no problem, right? Because you can go on to barnesandnoble.com and type in the title and author name for one of my self-published books, and you can find it that way. But if you don't know what you're looking for and you're just browsing, my book is not going to come up in your search results. Whereas Amazon, at least I have a chance that it's going to come up in the search results. So that's one of the major points to consider when you're thinking about who to distribute with and why some people choose to do KDP Select. KDP Select is a 90 days at a time program that gives Amazon exclusive distribution rights to your book. For as long as you're enrolled in KDP Select, you can't sell PDFs on your own website. You can't sell through Apple or through Smashwords or any of that. It's only through Amazon. But they give you some marketing tools that for some self-publishing authors really make it worth the exclusivity. And also the fact that it's only 90 days at a time, you're signing a 90-day contract for that. And at the end of the 90 days, you can get out of that. That helps too, because it's not like you're giving them exclusive rights in perpetuity. It's just for 90 days at a time. And so some people just stay with KDP Select because they've found with their other self-published books, they don't make enough sales through those other channels to make it worth publishing in more than one place. But other people publish across different platforms because, you know, for example, I have an aunt that only reads on her Nook. And so I started publishing on Smashwords so she could
read it. That's perfect. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And then a third strategy is to have part of your launch plan to start with KDP Select. When that first 90 days comes up, then not do KDP Select anymore and then branch out from there. So that the effect is that for the first 90 days that your book is published or out there, it's only available on Amazon, but then you open it up to other distribution platforms after that.
That's actually a strategy I was going to ask you about, because that seems like those marketing tools that they offer, and I would like to maybe explore a little bit more what those are, if that's something you're familiar with, but I feel like that would probably be a really neat way to try and kick things off, you know, build some steam through that ebook platform, and then if you're going into print, start with the print shortly after that, for example. So do you have any more information on what those marketing tools are?
Yeah, I know they're changing them all the time to try and make that package more and more appealing. So their algorithm, the search algorithm, works on a points basis. The algorithm's always changing, but one of the things that happens is that they favor KDP Select books.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that can be a huge boon, especially if you're just starting out and you're trying to build your audience and your author platform. Another one of their marketing tools that I have found it's really helpful, especially during the launch period, is during that 90 days, you can make your book free for a certain number of days. I can't remember whether it's like 5, maybe. Don't quote me on that, but something like that. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to be consecutive days. So using the KDP Select tool and offering your ebook for free that way shows it as being on sale. And who doesn't love a good sale?
Right. It's like they're working that psychological angle.
Yeah. And the newest tool that I've seen that they've introduced is you can do a graduated sale thing where, for example, you can, over the period of 7 days, you can offer it for free for 3 days. This is for example, it's customizable. Mm-hmm. You can offer it for free for 3 days. Then it can be 50% off for 3 days. And then it can be, I can't remember how much, like 25% off for 1 day. And so that also creates, it's that really magic formula. It's not just a sale, but it's for a limited time. So it creates a sense of urgency and people are more likely to buy.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch involved in there with the algorithm, like why it's really good to offer your book for free for periods of time, or even your first in series having it be perma-free, that I'm sure you've gone into some detail with in your marketing podcasts. Is that something that you guys have talked about?
You know, we actually haven't talked about it from that angle. So if you'd like to, feel free to elaborate on that, because I think that would be valuable information for anyone who's interested in this.
Yeah. So when I first started self-publishing and people were like, oh, offer the book for free. And I was like mortally offended because it had taken me like five years to write this book.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And I'm like, I'm worth more than that. And yes, you are. And I was. It's not about that. It's that if you are self-publishing and you want to make money off your writing and you want to have a career as an indie author, a self-publishing author, it's a long game. And that's the thing that I didn't understand when I first started. And so doing things like offering the first book in a series perma-free as a hook to get people into your series, or having your book be free for a few days, or doing the graduated sales, those kinds of things. What it does is it drives traffic to your Amazon page. That in itself is points in the algorithm. Downloads are points in the algorithm. And so it's, when I say points in the algorithm, the whole point of this is to make your book more visible.
Right, yeah.
So that when people are searching for books like yours, you're ending up on the first or the second page of results instead of like number 1072. Like,
right.
So I don't know how many people actually scroll through that many results, but I certainly don't. And that's why it's so important to do what you can to get your book to show up within those first couple of pages of results, or even like in the top 100 in your genre. That's pretty darn good if you're a indie author who's doing your own marketing stuff. So doing things like graduated sales, getting the traffic, you're getting downloads. And so even though you're not making money on like the 4 days of your book being free, what happens is that your book is more visible to people who are searching for the next, like, I don't know how long, week or so. And that means they're more likely to click on it and hopefully buy it if you have a really well-written description and a catchy cover. And that makes it more likely that it's going to stay visible and more people will find it and click on it and so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I do think that that sounds like a really effective strategy if extending that platform, particularly if you're a debut author who's pursuing this route. That seems like it would be a really wise choice to make and the right path to pursue. And one of the questions that naturally comes up to me then is, so let's say you have decided you're going to go with KDP Select for those first 90 days. So you can't, of course, be offering the book anywhere else in any other format. Can you work with something like Smashwords, or can you be working with CreateSpace to have like a scheduled launch date so that on day 91, it's like, bam, it's all ready and set to go. We don't have to worry about doing it all on day 91. We can kind of set it all in advance to be released to the world on that date.
You know, that's a really good question. So I know that you can do pre-orders, but that's not the same thing as what you're talking about. Because if your book is listed on Smashwords as a pre-order, you're already in violation of that agreement with KDP Select. I'm trying to remember whether Smashwords offers an option where you can like schedule the publishing date. I want to say yes, but I'm also not positive. So the best way to find out is to like go to smashwords.com. So Amazon, for example, you can't.
Okay.
You can't schedule that in advance unless you're going to do a pre-order thing. And BT Dubs pre-orders for first in a series, terrible idea. Don't do it.
All right.
That's my short version.
That's the short review of pre-orders for a series, first book in a series.
Yeah, again, that has to do with how the algorithms work in the marketing. That's probably like, I don't want to make any blanket statements like that, but you'd have to have a really, really, really tight marketing plan to make a justified argument for why a pre-order is a good idea for a first book, and I haven't found that argument yet. The other thing I want to say, though, so there is an author that I know of that's enrolled in KDP Select, and she's done something super clever. If you buy the book through Amazon, and their ebook format is a Mobi, right?
Mm-hmm.
But say you don't have Kindle or Kindle app, and you want the book in EPUB or a PDF format or some other format, what she'll do is, if you buy the book on Amazon and then show her proof of receipt, she will send you the book in any format you want it in. So technically, it's not, as far as I can tell, and I haven't done the fine print and I'm not a lawyer, but it looks like this isn't in violation of the terms because Amazon's still getting its money, which is the whole point.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So they're still buying the book through Amazon. It's just that now they get to have it in their preferred format. So I just want to put that out there. I thought that was really clever when I learned about that. I was like, that could be a really good solution, actually.
Yeah, that's really clever. And it's an opportunity for direct engagement between the author and the reader. Because if a reader is able to get a hold of you at an email address, or they like tweet you their receipt or something like that, that's a really great chance to actually interact with the people that are interested in reading your book. And I think that would also be part of a really great experience to have, whether you're the reader in that environment or you are the author.
Boom. Absolutely. And it's a great opportunity to capture their email address so that you are controlling your own email list. And that's a whole other. Have you gotten into like newsletters and things like that in your marketing podcasts?
You know, we haven't covered it a ton. So if we want to spend a few minutes on it now, that's actually something that I've been working toward building my own email list right now. So I'd be curious to know what strategies you might have for that. And then perhaps, you know, if there's anything valuable I've learned to chip in, I can throw that in too.
So the strategies for capturing people's emails, like what you just mentioned in terms of this is a really good opportunity if the way that this woman does her whole KDP select, but you can have it in a different format thing. That's a really good opportunity to capture it. Also, putting like a page at the front of the book, like if you sign up for this email list, then you get a free book. Preferably, it would not be the one they just bought, right?
Right, yeah. That, yes, hopefully anyway, unless they want to gift that one to somebody else.
Yeah, that would just like make me really mad. But that's another good way too, is by creating a email, like an incentive to sign up for your email that goes beyond, you know, get news about, because it's good. Like, if I'm into you as an author, of course, I want to like know when you have a new book coming out. But it's even better if you can offer something of value to get in exchange for that email address, because you're getting something of value when you have their email address. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. And that's actually the perfect moment for me to give a plug for my own newsletter or email list, which is that folks who do sign up for my email list, you can head over to rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. Anyone who signs up for that is automatically eligible to receive 10% off either my manuscript assessment or personal writing coach services. So there's an opportunity to get something in exchange for signing up. So there's all sorts of ways that we can probably find little clever ways to have a bit of a trade-off in exchange for getting that email list to grow.
Absolutely. And then once you have their emails, there's a whole beautiful strategy for keeping people engaged and making sure that the people who stay on your email list are actually engaged with your platform as an author. There's so much to be said about that that I don't want to go into, but CKSyme.com, she and her daughter, RL Syme, Rebecca, they have their own podcast that deals with marketing strategies in particular. And they also have a Facebook group about this, and I highly recommend them as a resource for learning more about marketing your self-published books.
And do you happen to remember the name of that podcast offhand? I know you gave us the name of the creators, so we can always look it up by that.
So CK Syme's website is called Smart Marketing for Authors, and she just has like so many great tips, and you can sign up for her newsletter too and get tips in your newsletter. And the podcast is called Smarty Pants Book Marketing Podcast.
All right.
And I highly recommend that.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome resource. And like you said, you know, there's so much to be said about newsletters that probably warrants an episode or half of an episode unto itself. So perhaps we'll leave that to the side. And like you mentioned, listeners can go check out that podcast. And if you're just looking to start poking around the internet, I personally use MailChimp.com, like mail, MailChimp.com, to run my newsletter. And that I find that to be decently effective for what I'm looking to do. It's a free service, so feel free to check that out. And yeah.
And I just want to mention the other person who has some great content, free content about book marketing is Nick Stevenson. He's the one that wrote How to Supercharge Your Kindle Sales. And if you go to his website, and Stevenson is Stephenson, he has some great free content that is a lead into his paid content. But even the free content, because I just don't have a ton of money for that kind of stuff these days, is really valuable and helpful. And I was talking about keywords earlier and how to think about keywords. And his book, and his free content, like the videos, was crucial to my understanding how keywords work and how to integrate them into the book blurb and things like that. So I highly recommend him.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great resource. I'll have to check that one out. And of course, you mentioned, you know, keywords. That was part of even the very first answer, doing that research in advance. So don't wait until you're at the point of ready to launch before you start looking into that stuff, because it sounds like it's something you really want to put the time and dedication into making sure you've got right.
Yes, 100%. And while we're talking about this really quick, I'd like to add a footnote to our conversation about which format.
Sure.
Especially since we've been talking so much about Amazon. So I mentioned earlier, Amazon's digital is KDP. Mm-hmm. That's their ebook. And their print on demand is CreateSpace. However, they have added an option through KDP where you can create a print version through KDP by pushing this button and going, just adding a few more things. Like the print version of the cover. Here's a word of caution. I know someone who did it that way because it was easy. They were already publishing an ebook through KDP. They saw this option to do a print book. They're like, oh, this makes it really easy. Click. And they did that. And what I've heard is that he does not have the option to order author copies of his book.
Oh, no.
Now, why this is important. The author copy of the book, you buy it for the price of printing plus shipping.
Right.
And it's way cheaper than the list price on CreateSpace or Amazon. So before you hit that button, please go research and see what the difference is between those two, because my understanding is that you can't order author copies if you create a print book through KDP.
Yeah, and that's something that would, of course, be valuable, not only to just have our own copy of it at that cost, but also to be able to buy a bunch of author copies and turn around and, you know, sell them at an event that we attend, or if there's a local book event, or we'd have a speaking opportunity in our local community. I mean, that would be a really great way to get those print books in people's hands. And if your hands are tied and all you can do is say, well, you can go ahead and check it out online, that would be quite the dent in sales, I can imagine.
Well, and actually what he does is because he still sends out print ARCs and does giveaways and all the kinds of things that you want to do when you're trying to build your platform, he buys his print books at list price.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, granted, he gets some of it back in royalties, but I don't think it evens out. I'm not sure about that, but it doesn't sound to me like it would even out. Yeah. Knowing how much you make off the royalties for a print book through CreateSpace, I cannot imagine that it evens out.
Right. Well, that's definitely good information to have then. So I guess the moral of the story coming out of that conversation is, regardless of the platform that you're pursuing, regardless of the format that you're pursuing, make sure you're reading those fine details. Because again, once we reach this stage, we're treating it as a business, right? We want to make sure we know what we're getting ourselves into. We've already invested a ton of time in creating a manuscript we're really proud of. That's why we're sharing it with the world. So we may as well be diligent, patient, and play that long game, like you mentioned earlier, to make sure we're in the best shape possible when it comes time to distribute.
Absolutely.
All right, that concludes part one of this mini-series on self-publication featuring Sione Ashleman. In the next installment, set to debut on Friday, January 26th, we'll cover ISBNs, what they are and whether they're worth getting, formatting, and more, so stay tuned for that. Thanks to Sione for joining me and to you listeners as well for being part of this episode. Of course, I owe a major thank you to Kristen Oakley, whose patronage of the show at $3 per episode goes a long way into helping the RightsCast become self-sustaining. To cash in on a shout-out in every episode, along with other great patron rewards, check out patreon.com/rightscast, where you can become a contributing member to the show today. That's all for now, but we'll meet again next week to pick up with the second installment of this mini-series on self-publishing. In the meantime, write on and write well.